Let's do this!
A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it.
Oh, God. Down the sideline. Wow. Touchdown.
Unbelievable.
Trying to finish it.
It's over. It's
up. Here's a chance. That call. Shot rebound. Score.
How's it going, everybody? Matt Robinson with you in the Tall Can Audio Studios here in beautiful Bytown, Canada. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio as well. Wherever you're listening to this, we'd ask you go ahead and hit that subscribe button, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I think they call it a follow on Spotify. There's been some confusion there from a couple of listeners, but wherever you're listening to this, there is a way to keep track of us, put us right in your feed, and we will work as best we can to keep the good stuff coming for you. Today, really excited. Good show today. We have James Myrtle of The Athletic with us. Certainly Leaf fans and hockey fans across Canada will know James very well. I'm not going to run down the resume too much right here because we're going to go through it a little bit with him on the show. But certainly a well-recognized name across the NHL and one of the big wigs at the NHL area, the Canadian area for sure, of The Athletic. We'll talk to him about how we kind of grew The Athletic, certainly here in Canada, to be what it is now, which is absolutely booming. Even during a time where sports are shut down, they keep putting out the good stuff. So if you want to go back, Rob was here. He wasn't here, but he was on the show back on Sunday. And we covered a lot of things, including the seven most disappointing performances of the NHL season. We got to rain down blows on people who have disappointed us. It's like Festivus. That is on Tall Can Sports number 404. And it is available now wherever you're listening to this. You can go back and check that one out. Also, last week, Audio Whiplash number 189. We had Dave Bedini of the Rio Statics. He was fantastic. Also of the West End Phoenix. We talked about touring with the Hip, the Canadian Rock Revolution. A really interesting conversation with him as well. You can go back and find. Also, we've recently had Maddie Lang talking about the NFL and how business just kept on booming. And certainly had to discuss with him Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That continues to make ripples right now, still to this day, across the NFL. And Brady was just on Howard Stern talking about some of the things that led him out of New England. So that's a fascinating topic as well. And we had our pal, three-time Canadian Paralympian Amy Burke. She was on the show not too long ago as well, talking about postponing Tokyo 2020. What that's done to her, what it was like to compete in the final sporting event on Canadian soil before the big shutdown, and where this leaves her moving forward. So all kinds of awesome stuff right now, and we're going to keep it coming for you. We're going to keep having guests. We're going to keep putting new shows out. All of those are at tallcanaudio.com, or just subscribe to Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app. With all of that out of the way, let's not wait around anymore. We'll get right to James Myrtle of The Athletic right here on Tall Can Sports. So, as promised, from The Athletic Toronto, James Myrtle, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I think like a lot of people, you know, we're just kind of trying to get by here, and it's actually been a little easier these last couple of weeks to get guests. I think a lot of people in your profession are looking for stuff to do right now.
Well, I mean, we're still busy, yeah. But it's not as busy. I mean, most of the time during the season, I'm, you know, on a plane or in a hotel or, you know, in another city, and, right. You know, during the season, I'll work 6-7 days a week and 12-hour days, and it's harder to do when you're not traveling as much and stuff like that.
So. Certainly. I've seen in a couple places there on the Leaf Report podcast yesterday, you've fallen into the gaming trap a little bit while you're stuck at home.
Yeah, you know, it's just like I got a little bit more time on my hands. I mean, still not a lot of time, but yeah. you know, I'm trying to learn. I downloaded NHL 20, and it's the first time I had played one of the NHL games since like probably like NHL 11 or something. So it's, you know, almost a whole decade out of the loop. So yeah. I'm certainly behind, but, you know, it's been good. And, you know, my son's 5, and I'm kind of just showing him kind of how video games work and stuff like that too. So it's been fun.
I've gone the other way. I didn't get anything new, but I've dug out one of my old, I got an old N64. I've got hooked back up. I'm playing old, like Ken Griffey baseball from 98 and stuff like that. So
the great thing I like about the new consoles is it kind of connects you to other people. It's kind true. Of like a social, I was playing very badly. I was playing Fortnite the other day with Dom, who's, you know, one of our most popular writers on The Athletic, our stats guy. And he was kind of showing me the ropes of how Fortnite works and what you try and do. And it's almost like you can, and I'm trying to get my dad's 68 and he lives in BC. I'm trying to get him to get a PlayStation, and then we could play golf online, together. Yeah. So, cause I remember, you know, 20 years ago, or more, when I lived with my dad, we would play all the time. And now technology allows us to do it across a great distance while we're stuck at home. So I'm hopefully he gets it together and goes and gets a PS4 and we can play.
That's a pretty cool idea. I wonder if you could kind of quickly bring listeners up to speed. I think most of our listeners, we reference it often enough on this show, are familiar with The Athletic. Can you give us just a quick sum of your background and how you made your way there?
Sure. I grew up in BC. I went to school out there. I got a degree in English in literature. And I, you know, I was thinking I was going to be an English professor. And, you know, I decided to take a year off and kind of think over what my options were going to be for grad school. And ultimately, I decided that my first love was hockey. And if I could find a way to combine kind of a love of creative writing with hockey somehow, that maybe that might make sense. So, you know, I was looking at Ryerson University because I knew that Bob McKenzie and some other really well-known journalists had gone there. And it was the only grad school I applied to. And I knew it was going to be really difficult to get in. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning for me because I got accepted at Ryerson. I moved to Toronto in 2003. And I loved it. You know, I loved the media and the journalism, and it just felt like, I want to say for the first time in my life, it's like, okay, this makes sense. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And, you know, and it went really well. You know, I got a scholarship at Ryerson and I got hired at the Globe and Mail as an intern, and that was the beginning for my career. And, I was at the Globe for 12 years. And I had my own website on the side while I was there, and I became the Leafs beat writer in my late 20s. And I did that for quite a long time. And, you know, as the newspaper started to decline and started to really cut back on sports, that I was sort of looking towards the end of my time at the Globe for what was next and where I was going to go and where the industry was going to move. And I was waiting for something digital and something different to come along. And thankfully The Athletic did, you know, right. In 2016, they headhunted me and they met with me in September of 2016. And we talked through a bunch of different scenarios. And, you know, I said that if I wanted to join, I wanted to have some kind of a leadership role in what we were doing on the editorial side. And they needed someone to do that.
Right.
And that was kind of the beginning for me. So, left the newspaper and joined the startup, and I was the 7th or the 8th person that they hired. And
wow,
now here we are three and a half years later, and we have, you know, 500 plus employees, and we're all over the world, and it's been a pretty amazing journey.
I got a couple questions I'd love to ask you about The Athletic just quickly before I do. And you do still write predominantly about the Leafs now, but you mentioned being a Leafs beat guy for a while. I've always kind of wondered, you know, as a BC guy growing up, is there like an extra, you know, I guess you look around the NHL and, you know, you have your original six and these kind of teams are above and beyond, or maybe if you're covering the Penguins or whatever, there's some teams that are more high profile than others. Does that translate into your industry? If you're covering the Leafs, is that kind of viewed as a better gig than, I don't know, covering the Hurricanes or something like that. Does it feel like that when you're doing it, or would you have been just as happy to maybe cover the Canucks and go back home a little bit?
Well, when I was looking to get in, as my dream job was to cover the NHL.
Right.
And I knew, I learned pretty quickly when I moved to Toronto and I was in journalism school that was going to be extremely difficult to do. And I remember looking at the industry, looking at where the positions were. And one of the people I greatly admired was Craig Custance, who was at that time was the Atlanta Thrashers beat writer in Atlanta, you know. And I looked at what he was doing and the kind of writing he was doing. Is like, man, if I could do that, if I could be like the only guy in a place like Atlanta or Columbus, or, you know, I looked at Mike Russo in Minnesota, Jeremy Rutherford in St. Louis, and all people that are now colleagues that I work with. But I was just like, if I could be one of those people, that would be, because I looked at, you know, the Canadian industry was, it was a lot of older beat writers that had been in their jobs for a long period of time. A lot of the papers were unionized and they weren't going to go anywhere. And if anything, the newspaper industry was going to get smaller and smaller. And I was just like, it's going to be awfully hard for me at the time I was coming into the industry to get a position covering an NHL team. And it was really difficult. I mean, it took probably, I guess, like 6 years before I got an NHL beat writing job. And it just happened that it was the Leafs, in part because the paper where I was at, I worked on the desk. I was part-time at the Globe for a long time. And they just happened to have two or three people covering the Leafs all the time. And it was just an easier way for me to get my start, for them to test out a young person on the beat.
Yep.
As opposed to if you went to Vancouver or Montreal, and I tried to get those jobs at the Globe, they just went to more senior people than me. It just worked out that the junior job on the Leafs was kind of an easier training ground for me, for the newspaper to trust me with. So that's how it started. You know, I was in my late 20s and I started doing like Leafs game stories and stuff, and they liked what I did and it went from there. Mm-hmm. So, but I didn't, when I got into the industry, honestly, like when I left Kamloops and I moved to Toronto, I was thinking I was going to like cover junior hockey or something.
Sure,
I just wanted to be involved in hockey.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write. And, but you know what? My first love, though, going back to when I was a kid, was always the NHL.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know how realistic it was to be able to find a position working in hockey. So I guess, I mean, to answer your question, I guess the Leafs job is more prestigious, but I mean, part of it's what outlet you're with. And, you know, it's like if you're covering hockey for the New York Times or, you know, it's different than
certainly.
So it's like the industry is not just like what team you write about.
Right.
It's like who do you write for? How big is your platform?
Sure. How many,
all those kinds of things.
Big of an audience and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, are you writing for a tiny local paper? Are you writing for a national newspaper? Are you writing for, you know, obviously the industry's changed a lot, even in the time that I've been part of it. But yeah, there's lots of factors that go into it beyond what team you cover. But for me, it was never about the team that I covered.
Right.
I was never picky about that. You know, I remember interviewing for jobs, you know, Detroit, Montreal, Vancouver. I would have went anywhere.
Yeah.
I literally would have went anywhere. So.
You kind of mentioned that, you know, it's been, I guess, about 4 years now or whatever since you moved over to the Athletic. At the time that you decide to do it, you know, you have a young family, you're established, but the newspaper industry is shrinking. Did it not feel, I got to tell you, and I signed up, I was, you know, I don't remember exactly what month, but pretty early on when the Athletic moved to Toronto, I jumped on it because I was interested. But did it not feel like, did it feel like a risk at all, in the sense that people at the time, and still to a certain extent, want to go the other way from paying for things? The internet is free and people openly scoff at, you know, you click on a link and it's paywalled. And I'm sure you still run into that from time to time. But, you know, did you believe right from the beginning, hey, this could work, people will pay for good stuff?
Well, I thought it was worth betting on. I mean, the thing I knew is that the old model wasn't going to work. I knew that.
For sure.
You know, I was at the Globe, like I said, around 12 years. And in that time, the sports section went from 25, 26 full-time staff down to, I mean, when I left, it was like three or four. something like that. Like it effectively went from a really big, vibrant session with Stephen Brunt and Mike Grange and David Naylor and Jeff Blair. And like we had an Eric Duhatchik and Sean Gordon, and we had an incredible, incredible section. It was a great place to come in as a young guy and kind of watch what people were doing and learn. And it went from that down to where it was kind of like just me and two other writers, and all the editing was getting outsourced. And it was pretty clear that, and what they were doing on digital wasn't very effective in sports. And I had to try and figure out what was next. And it just so happened that The Athletic wanted Toronto to be their second market. And I didn't know if it was going to work or not for sure. I mean, but I thought that we could grind it out and enough of my readership would say, you know what, I want to keep reading what James is doing. I want to support him. And the other thing too, is I think the content got better when I went to The Athletic. I had, all of a sudden there were no deadlines. There were no limitations in terms of word counts, story formats. Sure, I mean, it was basically a blank canvas. We could do whatever we wanted. I was in charge, so I could, you know, if I wanted to write 5,000 words about Martin Marincin or whatever, like I could do it. Like if you look at some of the early stuff I did, it was, you know, I remember that first playoff series we covered with the Leafs in Washington, and I think it was the second game of that series went to double overtime.
Yep,
I want to say.
Yep.
And Kapanen scored the goal. Mm-hmm. So that game ended at like whatever it was. It was late.
Yeah.
It was really late. And then we go down in the dressing room, we talk to the players, and most people had to file their stories like at the buzzer, like when the game ended in overtime. I had like another 3 hours or something. I remember I worked till like 3 a.m. or something, 3:30 in the morning. And if you look at the story I wrote after that game, it's like 3,000 words. It's got like all this stuff about Kapanen growing up in an NHL dressing room with his dad, and like it's got like, I got one-on-one with a bunch of players in the dressing room after the game. And what we were able to do was so much different than what we were able to do at the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so we were experimenting a lot in the early days with The Athletic, and we were just trying to see, we're basically in a new medium. What's the best way to cover hockey in this new medium? And that's, The Athletic's kind of evolved into what it is now based on us trying different things in the early days and seeing what worked and what didn't work.
I think, like a lot of Leaf fans, I've written several 280-character columns on Martin Marincin, but we can save that for another time when hockey comes back. I'm curious, the industry itself and the teams that you're going to cover, when you make the move over, are teams, and I know gradually it would expand out across the country and across the continent, was everybody pretty receptive? Did you have trouble getting credentialed or things like that? Were you having to write in and say, you know, I'm from The Athletic now, and people know you and you're established, but, you know, are there certain markets or teams that kind of went, you know, what is this? Is this a blog? Is this a whatever that, you know, or was everybody pretty willing to go along and give you guys access?
Well, I think the key, as you said, is getting the right people. And then, like, you know, the Leafs knew me and there was a good relationship there, and they knew I was one of the, you know, popular established people on the beat.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to be in a position where they were saying, James, you can't come to the games. And so that was kind of how it started, is that, you know, we had John Lott on the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays aren't going to keep John Lott out of the press box.
Right.
We had Eric Kareen on the Raptors. They're not going to tell Eric Kareen he can't cover the Raptors. We had Sean Fitzgerald working for us, who obviously, I mean, I think he won Sports Writer of the year before he was laid off at the Star. Like, we had really established people with good reputations, and the teams wanted to make it work with us. And the key going into other markets, especially early on, was do the same thing. You know, we hire Aaron Portsline in Columbus. The Blue Jackets are not going to leave Aaron Portsline out of the press box. Craig Custance in Detroit was our fourth market. And then it was, you know, Montreal with Arpin and, you know, the Canadiens, obviously, and Marc-Antoine Godin in Montreal. And we got some of the best people, you know, in a lot of these places. And, you know, I think the teams, the thing that you could see and the teams could see too, is that even with the Leafs, like when I started on the Leafs beat in my first year, I think was 07, 08, I want to say. When I started, there were 15 or 16 seats for newspapers. Maybe even more if you include like the Hamilton Spectator and some of the other So there's this huge percentage of the press box. Like the press box is whatever it is for media. It's like maybe it's 75 or 80 seats or something like that. Huge percentage of that is newspapers. Mm-hmm. When I started in 07, 08, you go forward to when I joined The Athletic, there were empty seats. Like the press box was just, you'd go for some games. I'd go for the Globe on, let's say, like a Saturday night. Because some newspapers don't have an edition on Sunday.
Right.
And there'd be like three people in those 15 seats for the newspapers.
Wow.
So, you know, we could say to the teams, like, the newspapers continue to get smaller and smaller. Like I said, the Globe Sports Department went from whatever it was, 25 to three people. There's all of a sudden there's nobody in those seats.
Right.
So for the team to then say, we're not going to let The Athletic in the press box doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that they could see that there was a problem mm-hmm. and that something had to be next. And our argument was, why not us?
Yeah, it might be us.
Why can't we be next?
You know, maybe the last thing on The Athletic here is I'm curious, across Canada, you know, you're obviously responsible or partly responsible, at least certainly for helping to build this out. Who are you looking for? Because you guys did give some chances to some young writers that had a good following. But gradually, as it started to build, certainly here in Canada, you start to add bigger nationwide names like Eric DeHatchick and Pierre LeBrun. You look down in the U.S. on something like baseball. When you get Ken Rosenthal, what do you think, you know, the balance was of trying to give young people, you know, a break, but using big names maybe to float it? Kind of what do you think the approach was there, or the thought process?
We knew it wasn't going to be all one or the other, you know. And very early on, if you look at what I did in Toronto, you know, we had those established people, and I talked about John Laud and Eric Crean and mm-hmm. Sean Fitzgerald, but also we started to bring young people in. And, you know, Dom Lecision is a perfect example. He started writing for us for, like, I think it was like $100 a story or $150 a story,
right?
Writing once a week. And, you know, now he's our national writer for us, making good money,
yeah.
And has a, you know, 3.5 years later. But we did that with lots of young people. I mean, one of the first writers I hired was Jack Hahn, who now works for the Toronto Maple Leafs as a coach. And he was doing kind of like film breakdowns and very kind of like technical, nerdy, looks at things. And, I was just looking for young people that had something different to offer.
Well, for me, it was like Justin Bourne. I'd never heard of until he came on at The Athletic, and now he's one of my favorite reads. Like, I don't miss anything that guy writes. It's fascinating, and you can see him now. He's popping up on the Fan 590. He's hosting there every day. Like, it was a good break for that guy.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised he hadn't heard. I mean, he was a pretty established writer.
Was he? Okay,
but then he went and worked for the Toronto Marlies as a coach.
Yes.
So he was kind of out of media, and yeah, and when I talked to Justin, who I know really well, when I talked to him, that was pretty early on for us. I mean, he was a big get for us that was 2017, so it was less than a year in.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was thinking of making a change. It was like, wow, like, this could be a game changer for us. And we had Tyler Dello writing for us back then, who now works for the New Jersey Devils. We've actually had, like, a lot of our good people have been snapped up by teams. Scott Wheeler was writing for us early on. I guess, like, for me, it was one of the best things about The Athletic is all the young people we've given chances to. Like, if you look just at Canada, it's mostly young.
It is, yeah.
People, like, it's, we don't have a lot of writers that are older than 40 on the staff. We really don't. Like, if, you know, Vancouver, we got Harmon Dale there, who's 19 years old. Winnipeg, we've got Murat Ateche. Edmonton, we got Daniel Nugent Bowman and Jonathan Willis, and I could go. Haley Salvian started for us in Ottawa this year.
Yeah.
We've got Mark Dumont in Montreal. You know, the people we've got working for us in Toronto. You know, we've got Joshua Cloak, and we've got Ian Tulloch, and Caitlin McGrath on the Blue Jays, and Blake Murphy on the Raptors. Like, a lot of young people who started with us as freelancers and were writing, like Dom was, for not a lot of money in the early days. Those are all those people I talked about. Well, almost all of them are full-time staff.
Right.
Those opportunities don't exist if The Athletic doesn't exist.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool that, you know, not only have I been able to kind of build a new role for myself, a new career for myself, but look at all the other people we've given opportunities to. Like that motivates us. You know, when I talk to the founders in San Francisco, that we talk about that all the time. Like we want this to keep growing and keep getting bigger and keep being better. And we can hire more smart young people that get opportunities.
Well, because
it was, even for me coming out into the industry in 03 or 04 or whatever, like it's really hard to get a chance in this industry.
Yeah. Well, and it's I've never once felt like it wasn't worth my money. Even right now, as we sit here with no sports on TV, I still open the thing up every day and there's something out there, right? There's something to read. It's a bargain and it's well worth it. So the model has worked. So I got you on the line here. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask one question. And I think about this a lot. And you referenced it on the last edition of the Leaf Report podcast, which is on the Athletic app for subscribers. It's also wherever you can get any of your other podcasts. Wherever you're listening to this, you'll be able to find the Leaf Report podcast. And you referenced, as we're sort of on hold here and what this season may or may not end up holding for the rest of the league and the Leafs specifically, I can't remember if you specifically used the word hate, but you definitely suggested that there is some animosity out there towards Kyle Dubas. And I wonder what that's about. As we move through what the Leafs are doing, they've certainly indicated that they're going hard in one direction, and they're doing it unapologetically. I wonder where you think kind of this heart, certainly in the market, there's a sizable portion of Leaf fans that don't agree with the way this has been built. They like the old Wendell Clark style Leafs or whatever, but is it maybe across the industry a little more? Is it, you know, what do you think it is that has caused this kind of split on what Dubas has done here?
Well, I mean, like, it's like anything in any industry is if you come in as a disruptor and you're doing something way different, then there's going to be critics and there's going to be people saying it doesn't work that way. And so that's what we're seeing. And you see it in media, you see it in the fan base. And Kyle Dubas knows this because he ran into this in the OHL and to a lesser extent the AHL, and people saying that this doing the things differently and doing this in a new way is not going to work. That's going to be there until they start having success and still until the Leafs start having deep playoff runs and until they're one of the best teams in the league consistently during the regular season, they're going to be questioned. And every little mistake they make, like not having a good enough backup goalie or whatever, that's going to be pointed to and saying it's going to be blown up to be bigger than it is.
Yeah.
And part of that's what we talked about off the top with the market and just how big and how passionate this market is. And, you know, there's, like I said, it's almost like you have to really prove yourself. And it's not going to be about evaluating the process. It's going to be about evaluating the results for a lot of people. I want to look at like the process in place. Like, is what they're doing make sense? And with a lot of the previous regimes with the Leafs, you could tell the process was flawed.
Right.
They might have gotten some good results sometimes. They might have made the playoffs in 2013, or they might have gone on a heater and won some games. But you could tell the process was flawed. You know, the thinking process that says you should buy out Mikhail Grabowski and then sign David Clarkson to a much worse contract.
Yeah.
Or, you know, trade for Dave Boland and trade for Jonathan Bernier because James Reimer was the problem, even though he had a 930 some save percentage right. in the playoffs for you. And you could just see the process was flawed. A lot of the stuff when I look at with Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham and Lawrence Gilman, a lot of what I look at when they are trying to make their team better, a lot of the process is right. Like a lot of the thinking that goes into the moves that they're making makes sense to me. So if they run into a bunch of injuries or if something goes sideways that they weren't expecting and they need to make a coaching change and et cetera, I don't think it's right to, if the thinking process that went into that was accurate, I don't want to just wait and then wait for them to fail and then criticize it afterwards. So that's kind of how I look at that.
From where I'm sitting, it's going to be nearly impossible, and please correct me if you disagree, but it's going to be nearly impossible to evaluate Kyle Dubas at all this year. When you look at the start they had, and then they changed the coach, and they get on a heater under the new coach, and then they're inconsistent for a while, which was maddening, and now the season's been lopped off. I don't know what's going to happen if we come back and we do some kind of weird playoffs. If they go deep, it's still going to be tainted by, well, this was weird. If they don't go deep, you're going to look at it and go, well, this was weird. Like, this season is so, Dubas is going to get you know, a fair crack at this with Keefe next year, right? Before you can draw any kind of real conclusions.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think next season is, and the thing too is the next season's team is going to be pretty much wholly Kyle Dubas's. There's going to be no more, there's going to be no bad Lou Lamoriello contracts right. to point to. There's going to be, it's going to be his coach. It's going to be his defense. And, you know, a lot of the big contracts were signed by him, you know, Tavares, Matthews, Marner. Sure, yeah. Nylander, a lot of the money that is, you know, it's largely going to be his team. There's not going to be a lot of holdovers anymore. So the thing is, when you're a GM, it usually takes 3 to 5 years to evaluate what a GM's doing. And the only problem is with some GMs, by the time they get to 3 or 4 years, they've already screwed it up so badly that you don't need that long to evaluate them.
Yeah, we get it.
I don't think that we're at that point yet with. I know we're not at that point yet with Kyle Dubas where it's like, we know this isn't going to work and it's a mess.
Yeah.
He was handed a pretty difficult trying to figure out what to do with Zaitsev and Marlowe and the cap situation last year while still trying to improve the blue line. And I remember writing about that last June at the draft in Vancouver, and they were trying to do a lot of different things at the same time. And it was incredibly difficult, and it's still kind of up in the air if what they did worked or not, but no one can say that they were dealt an easy hand. I mean, they had to give up a first round pick to get rid of Patrick Marleau. Like that's not ideal for anybody. And you look at how well they picked with the second round pick they had in getting Nick Robertson last year. You would have liked them to have a first round pick one of these last couple of years. So,
right.
I think you're right. I think that next year there's not going to be a change. Like there's no way. And next year is going to be really, really important for this front office to show that their blueprint and their way of evaluating this and their way of how they think you should build an NHL team, if it works or not, next season is going to be hugely important.
We're not quite sure yet what that's going to look like, whether we have any more of this season to go first or whether we'll be diving straight into next season. Either way, James, I really appreciate you making a little time for us. Really appreciate you doing this. Before we get out of here, tell people where they can or how they can get signed up for The Athletic if they're not yet.
Yeah, I mean, download our app from whatever app store you've got. Just type in The Athletic. We're one of the most popular sports apps in the world right now. And if you want to subscribe, you know, we have a great free trial on right now. You go to theathletic.com/leafreport and you can try it out. And if you don't like it, you can cancel. And if you like it, you can stay signed up and support us, and you know, we'll keep hiring great young writers and keep hopefully being one of the positive good news stories in our industry.
Yeah, well, honestly, that'd be terrific, and we use you guys all the time for content here on the podcast for stories we've read here and directing people there all the time. So it is a great read. It's well worth the money. James, once again, really appreciate you making a little time for us. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.